sitting here with these three microphones in front of my face. Materialistic people like to, they think that's a sign of success to be speaking into a microphone. You see these politicians, their photographs, they have them with a microphone in front of their face, which means they're speaking to many people. Sign of success. Somewhere I saw a clip from, there was something about, I can't remember what it was, some nonsense thing, but it showed how some young woman in America, I guess it was in America, was like the idea that she's going to become successful in her future, and it showed that she came to some place and there are all newspaper reporters sticking microphones into her face and flashes from cameras going off, and this is considered to be successful. So you never know, Gurudas, you might become successful. There might be cameras flashing on you. What's the use? And then, you know, Prime Minister, and then where is Richard Nixon now? Which lump of stool is he crawling around in? Whoops, I better not say that. Still has his supporters. You have to be careful. Anyway, yesterday I was talking about Brahmacharya. I'll continue on that theme today. And the essence of Brahmacharya is to be a pure devotee of Krishna, but it's generally understood as, and certainly a major feature of that is celibacy. I'm just talking about being a success. Success is not being adored by worldly people. Kasmad bhajanti. What is that? Kasmad bhajanti kaveyo dana durma dandhan. Yeah, that's a statement. Why should a learned person, or one who actually knows the principles of life, why should he flatter people who are blinded by wealth? So, success, the greatest success in this material world is to be free from sex desire. And above and beyond that, there's the spiritual principle of love of Krishna. But as far as material achievements are concerned, to be free from sex desire, to be free from any desire, which means to be free from sex desire, because desire and sex desire, they go together. As we see in the case of Vishvamitra, that he was cultivating being free from desire, and for 60,000 years he had deliberately not thought of any material desire, and then in a second he fell down with the ankle bells of Menaka. So all desires are connected, and the material desires, and the grossest manifestation is sexual desire. And so the greatest achievement in this material world, in the material sphere, is to be free from material desire. And that is possible actually only by coming to the spiritual platform. But it's a far greater achievement and far more difficult achievement than being a great conqueror of kingdoms, or being a big politician, or being a learned person, or a rich person, or a beautiful person. There are so many billionaires in the world, but being a billionaire is relatively much more easy than being free of sexual desire, which of being free from any material desire. In the beginning, when we take to Krishna consciousness, we might think, well, it's fairly easy. But we gradually come to see what a big stockpile of material desires are there in the heart. There's this saying in English, the tip of the iceberg. That means that an iceberg, which probably none of us, no, we haven't seen. But you see that the tip of it sticks out of the water, and it may look quite big, but there's a lot more underneath. Only a little bit sticks out of the water. So like that, the material desires that we can see are just a sample. There's a huge stockpile. And even many desires are there in subtle form, which we may know, they may be very deeply in the consciousness. So, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, sarvadhaman parityaja mamaikam sharanam vraja. Ahaṁ tvā sarva pāpebhyo moksha yishāmi mā śucaḥ. If we surrender to Krishna, Krishna promises that he will release us from all sins, which include sins are analyzed in various stages. Kutam bijam falon mukam. There are various stages. The bij form is in the seed form. That means the general desires, which there's a stockpile of greed and lust in our heart. And when we come into contact, when the senses come into contact with the sense objects, then those deep desires, they may become manifest as specific desires. Or sometimes even without coming into contact with the senses, just the mind. Manasijam. The mind creates some desire. Even though it doesn't make any sense. And people become crazy, you see. Often people become... they lose all sense, even on the material platform. They may want to, for instance, marry someone. And it doesn't make any sense for that person to marry them, to marry that person. They become infatuated. It's called infatuation. And they think, well, I can't live without you, and they may commit suicide if they're blocked from doing so. It's just madness. Srila Prabhupada gave the example. He knew someone in Allahabad, I think it was, who's from a very wealthy family. His father was a famous barrister, but he married a girl from the Bungi colony. Nowadays you don't say Bungi. Bhangi, bhangi, that means Mahatma Gandhi called them Harijans. Means the lowest, the people who, you know, used to take human stool out on their heads. That was their job. Of course, they also have their place in society. Not that they're totally rejected. When in Pakistan, when the country was being formed and they were killing all the Hindus, the Muslims, they asked the Bungis to stay. And they didn't attack them, because if they didn't take out the stool, then who was going to do it? They didn't want to do it. So that's an example. Out of infatuation, he left his own family and went to live among the very uncultured people, and very poverty-stricken people. Of course, you have to be careful what you say nowadays, because if you say anything like that, you could be arrested here in India for saying such things. Just like in the West, you can be arrested for saying things against homosexuals. Such a mad world. Anyway, we're talking about becoming free from sexual desire. So let's discuss some examples of devotees people are free from sexual desire, because that is our aim. Now, in the examples of devotees, we'll see in every case, it's not that they're performing rigid austerities and biting their lips and squeezing their face up, you know, trying to be free of desire, but just because of their natural, overwhelming, pure love for Krishna, they don't feel sexual attractions. I'm going to speak about a few of them, and not in any particular order, just in the order that they came to my mind when I made a list of them. Actually, maybe this years ago, I was going to speak at a brahmachari meeting, but I didn't get around to it. So this has been sitting in my file for a few years. So I thought I might as well speak it rather than go on waiting for years more before I'm invited again to a brahmachari convention. So, Ramananda Rai, householder, is the greatest example, who Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that even though I'm a sannyasi, I don't think I'm as free from sexual desire as Ramananda Rai. That's amazing, isn't it? Of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is. Actually, he's full of desire, but it's fully spiritual desire. But Ramananda Rai, the incident is described in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, that Pradyumna Mishra, who, although it's not stated in Chaitanya Charitamrita, is said to be an uncle of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Mishra is the Mahaprabhu's name at home was Vishvamba Mishra. His forefathers were said to be from Jajpur in Orissa. So he came to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and said, I'd like to hear Krishna Katha from you. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, well, why ask me? I don't know anything. Whatever I know, I learned from Ramananda Rai, so you better go and hear from him. It seems so funny that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, I don't know. Giving credit to his devotees. So, Pradyumna Mishra went to visit Ramananda Rai, and he was received respectfully at Ramananda's house, because Ramananda was very well-to-do, being a retired major minister in the opulent kingdom, took early retirement with full pay. So he was greeted and asked to sit and wait. And he waited quite a long time. And after quite some time, Ramananda came. And he said, oh, I'm sorry, no one told me you were here. And what Ramananda had been doing, he had been training two beautiful young girls, Yuvati, as described, means youthful girl, 16 years old, something like that, in the flower of youth. He had been training them in dancing, for Ramananda had compiled a drama called Jagannath Vallabh, and he was training the girls for dancing in that drama for the pleasure of Lord Jagannath. And he wanted them to, for everything to be perfect for Lord Jagannath. So, he personally bathed them, smeared scent on their body, dressed them, and trained them to dance. Doesn't sound like the kind of thing a respectable gentleman should do. Pradyumna Mishra, on hearing about this, had some doubt, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu clarified that he doesn't feel any transformation in his mind or body while doing so, because he himself identifies with he doesn't identify with his body as thinking of it as a vehicle for his own enjoyment, but he thinks of himself as a servant of Radha and Krishna, and he thinks of these girls like that also. So he's fully situated on the spiritual platform. No thought of any personal enjoyment even comes in his mind, even in such a situation, where normally no one interested in spiritual advancement would do such a thing. To bathe young girls. No male would do that. But he did. It's unimaginable for us, but that's what it means to be free from sexual desire. So there's the great example. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's taught certain principles through certain devotees. Through Ramananda Rai, he taught what it means to be fully free from the pushings of Kamadeva, the material cupid. Through Haridas Thakur, he taught forbearance. Through Sanatan, he taught humility. And one more. Anyone? I can't remember just now. What is it? Yeah, Ramananda, he taught, through Ramananda he taught what it means to be free from sexual desire. Sanatan and Haridas, and one more is just not coming in my mind now. So another example, Shukadev, that he was wandering around naked. Actually, he left home, and his father, Vyasadeva, came running after him. So, as Vyas was running after him, he came across a pond where some young girls were playing and sporting in the water naked. And when they saw him, they rushed to cover themselves with their clothes. And Vyas thought, oh, wait a minute, my son just came past here. And he was naked. And they were, the same girls must have been here just, you know, 2-3 minutes ago. And why didn't they rush to cover themselves? When he came. So he asked the girls, what's going on? He's a young boy. I'm an old man. Then why are you concerned with me and not with him? And they said, well, you see, we could understand that in his mind there was no consideration of mundane male or female, whereas in your mind there is. He's the Vyasadeva, the incarnation of God. But he was playing the role of a householder. So in such a situation, he would avert his eyes, he wouldn't look at them. So Shukadeva observed no such formality. He was neither concerned to look at the women or to avert his eyes from them. As far as he was concerned, they were like the trees on the pathway. It made no difference to him. So there's an example, Shukadeva. Narada, the much maligned Narada. Why is Narada, people all over India, they think Narada is some kind of clown. How did that come about? Who introduced this? He's a great devotee. TV and cinema, maybe, but where did that come from? How did they start all this? That's what I was thinking, maybe out of the local dramas, but where did this idea come from? It's the local drama, yeah, but who introduced this? So it must have had some origin. Because in Shastra we find he's always praised as a great devotee. Well, in his instance, he took Kayadhu, who was the wife of Hiranyakashipu. He took Kayadhu to his ashram because she was pregnant from Hiranyakashipu. He was away performing austerities. She was pregnant, and Narada took her to protect her because the demigods were afraid that the son of Hiranyakashipu would be a big demon like him. So Narada told them, "Hey, get out of here. Don't harass her. There's a great devotee in her womb." So they were appeased. But just for safety and to so that she would feel safe, Narada took her to his ashram until Prahlad was born. And the demigods, they weren't going to kill her, but they were going to wait for the child to be born and then kill him. That was the idea. So Narada took her for protection until Hiranyakashipu came back. Because Narada had such a thing that he could mix with the demons. They kind of trusted him also. Now, Narada's ashram, that must be in Vrindavan because he was cursed. He could only stay in one place no more than 3 days. So the only place he stayed any length of time was in Vrindavan. When he wrote Narada Pancharatra. So, that's not stated in the text. I just thought of that now. So, she was the wife of the king of the universe, must have been very beautiful. She was young. She was pregnant, but there are levels of pregnancy also. But surely no brahmachari would take a woman into his ashram. But Narada did. What is possible for him is not possible for everyone. And that's not to be imitated. Not everyone can do this kind of thing. They can do because... So devotees like Ramananda, Narada, they can do this kind of thing because they are free from sex desire. With anyone else, there's a possibility of disaster, is there? But she also felt safe. She didn't feel threatened. Of course, that may be, that quite often happens in the modern age, that women feel safe under the protection of a holy man, but then he exploits them. It happens quite often. There have been many cases. In many cases, it may be that the holy man himself underestimates the power of Maya. He may try to do something to help unprotected women or something like that. Thinking himself to be more free of sexual desire than he actually is. So that's why we have to be careful. It's not that... I don't think that it's in every case that someone takes the role of a holy man. It's not that in every case when a holy man is found having some sexual interaction with anyone, boys, girls, whatever it may be, that they deliberately took the dress of a sadhu to exploit women, but it may be that they were not aware of how powerful Maya is, and they overestimated their own saintliness and their own freedom from material desire, and underestimated the power of Maya. That's why we have to be very, very careful. Ramanujacharya, on one occasion, he went to one place and he visited. There was one disciple of his, young woman. He went to visit, but she was actually naked. She had nothing to wear. She was poverty stricken. But she trusted him not to exploit. But then he could understand the situation and he passed some cloth inside. On another occasion, Ramanuja trusted his disciples that they were puffed up. That we are great renunciants, and why is Ramanuja giving so much importance to this Dhanurdas, I think his name was, who's a householder. So his renunciant disciples, Ramanuja told them that you go in the early part of the night, then the wife will be lying down asleep and Dhanurdas will come a little later. You go in the early part of the night, go in quietly and take off all her jewels and bring them to me. So they did that. And she was awake, but she realizes Ramanuja's disciples come to take her jewels. So then when they took off on one side of her body, she rolled over, and then they all ran away. And then her husband came and saw her like that and said, how come one side of your body the jewels are gone? And she explained that our guru's disciples came and they took one side and I turned over so they could take the other side, and then they all ran away. And then he chastised her, that, why? See, and they want to take your jewels, why didn't you let them take them all? So Ramanuja arranged like that. Oh, before that, he saw that some days before he arranged that at night, while all the brahmacharis and sannyasis were sleeping, someone stole all their kopins. And they were all upset. They were shouting and screaming and cursing. And so he told them, you see, you were so upset that your kopins got stolen. But their attitude of these householders is that let them take all our jewels. It must be that our guru wants them for some purpose. So in this way, he showed the renunciants how this particular householder couple were actually very renounced in their own way, surrendered devotees. But he trusted his disciples to go and they were renunciants. He trusted them that they wouldn't sexually abuse the beautiful wife. There are so many examples. Shankaracharya, he traveled throughout India meeting brahmanas and defeating them in debate, and then he would make them take sannyas. People, they call themselves followers of Shankara's Advaitavad. Well, if you're actually a follower, then you have to take sannyas, because that's his understanding, that you can't cultivate this understanding unless you take sannyas. And you can only take sannyas if you're from Brahmin family. So in the meantime, you have to do your Varnashram duties. That's his take on reality. Not that he believes in reality. Well, Brahma Satyam. There's nothing real in this world, according to his philosophy. Anyway, one time Ramanuja debated with Mandana Mishra, who is a famous exponent of Mimamsa, or Karma Mimamsa, we should say. Mimamsa in itself is not bad, but the idea that you simply live in this world and perform Vedic rites, and in this way you enjoy the world by performing pious activities, which was a very prominent philosophy at that time. So Ramanuja came and he defeated him in argument, and he was about to take him off and take him to take sannyas. But then Mandana Mishra's wife, she said, "Well, wait a minute, you defeated him, but what about me? You have to defeat me too before you can take him off." Bharati, her name was Bharati. So Shankara said, "Okay. So what do you want to discuss about?" She said, "Sex." He said, "Well, I don't know anything about sex." So he asked for some time to find out about it. So he couldn't do it in the body of a sannyasi. So by his mystic power, he found one king who had just died, and he entered into his body, and by mystic power, leaving his own body in a trance, like not in a dormant state, and so then he lived as a king and started enjoying as a king. And in this way he found about sexual activities. Meantime, the ministers, who are very intelligent, could understand that something unusual is going on here, because our king is not the same king. He seems to be a much more sagacious person. Anyway, that's another whole story. They wanted that he wouldn't go back to the old body. Anyway, after some time of finding out all that needed to be found out about it, Shankara went back to his own body and debated with Bharati and defeated her. So he could do that. He indulged in it just for the sake of finding out. Normally you'd expect someone would become completely attached. Like Indra, he was attached to sensual enjoyment. But when he was cursed to become a pig, he became attached to that position and didn't want to give it up. But Shankara found out for the sake of knowledge, engaged in sexual activity, and then again came out without being attached. So that's not for any ordinary person. Of course, Shankara is Lord Shiva. You may say, well, what kind of brahmachari is he? Because by his sexual activity, all the jivas in the universe are impregnated into the universe. Aham bija pradapita. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, I'm the seed-giving father. So that is Lord Shiva, and by his sexual activity with Durga, all the mundane sexual activity follows. Srila Prabhupada would often quote Lord Shiva as an example of dhira, one who is steady, one who is not disturbed, quoting from the drama Kumara Sambhav, the birth of Kartikeya. It's translated as by Kalidas, which Srila Prabhupada had studied in school. Srila Prabhupada was very impressed by that part. That when Parvati, beautiful young girl, we can't imagine how beautiful, she worshipped Lord Shiva and even touched his genital, and he was not disturbed. So Prabhupada would always give this as an example of dhira, one who is not disturbed. Of course, Srila Prabhupada in one purport says that, in another place says, well, actually Shiva, he did become disturbed because he did not exactly disturbed, but he did agree to the request of Parvati. Of course, that's a whole story. The demigods, they wanted him to marry Parvati, who was, after all, his eternal consort, who was Sati in her previous birth. They wanted him to marry her so that the commander of the demigod armies could be born for defeating the demons. But Srila Prabhupada gave the example that Lord Shiva was, even he agreed to the request of Parvati, but Haridas Thakur, but was the completely free from any desire, because on two occasions he was tested like that. Once the beautiful prostitute came to was sent to cause him to fall down. The sadhus are very much respected in India if they're practicing brahmacharya, but then if they fall from that position, no one likes it. People become very disgusted with that. Even recently in that South India, that so-called Nityananda Paramahamsa, when he was found out to be having illicit relationships with women, and nothing illegal actually, but he was considered disgraceful. And even in his hometown, Tiruvannamalai, the people who had been very much favorable to him, they mostly become very much disgusted with him. So, Haridas Thakur, he was venerated as a great sadhu. One envious local landowner, Ramachandra Khan, he wanted to destroy Haridas's position. So he sent a prostitute to him at night. Haridas's practice was to sit and chant all night and all day, most of the day also, just chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Not like our chanting. We're thinking of prostitutes and but fully absorbed in love of Krishna. So the beautiful young girl came, and Haridas saw her. She made her request, and he said, "Okay, you want to enjoy me? Okay, but I have a vow. I have to finish my 3 lakhs names every day, 3 times 64 rounds. So you just wait till I finish my rounds." And so he went on chanting and chanting and chanting, and then the night had ended. The night came to an end and she had to go away. So this happened 3 nights in a row. So the next night she came and said, "Look, I'm sorry, my chanting went on for a long time last night, so tonight I'll enjoy it." Second night. And again he said, "I'm sorry, but definitely, I'll finish my chanting on time tomorrow evening." So then on the third night she came, and he actually finished in time, before the end of the night. Said, "I finish now my chanting," and she said, "Well, now my mind has changed. I realize what a fallen person I am." And Haridas said that, "Yes, I could understand that Ramachandra Khan had sent you. And I would have left immediately, but I stayed just for your sake, to purify you." So she said, "What should I do? I'm so sinful that, I spent all my life as, I've been a prostitute, and I even came to do such a sinful act as to try to disgrace you, great saintly person." So he told her, "You just stay here. Worship Tulsi, chant the holy names, give away all your wealth, don't keep it. So prostitute came to test, not to test him, to make him fall down. But he instead lifted her up. So that's the standard. If you can deal with anyone if you can lift them up. But if you're going to fall down, then better you don't get involved. Then again, later on, Maya herself. Maya herself came to test Haridasa Thakur in a similar way, showing she came beautifully dressed in the night and made certain movements and tinkling her bracelets and bangles in such a way that even Lord Brahma would have become disturbed. I just looked up. Hare Krishna, Krishna, just went out chanting, that's all. So she was unable to disturb him. And then she bowed down to him. And she said, I am Maya. I can bewilder Brahma and all the demigods and so many sadhus, I bewildered, but I couldn't bewilder you. So then she also became his disciple. Said, I got Ram Nam from my husband, Lord Shiva. Ram Nam is the tarak that saves us from material existence. And Krishna, but now you initiate me into Krishna, which is the parak that will take, that gives us love of God, takes us to the lotus feet of Krishna. So, Haridasa Thakur, a great devotee, by his devotion, he is completely free from any sexual desire. Four Kumaras, they rejected the chance to become a Prajapati like Daksha. They wanted to concentrate on spiritual advancement. And they kept themselves in the form of little boys. Because as little boys, there's the bodily organs aren't developed in such a way that the sexual desires manifest, nor are they attractive to others. Lakshman is always praised as a great brahmacharya. He didn't know what Sita looked like, because he never looked above the feet. What was it? He was asked, you know, could you recognize her or something? I wouldn't know what she looked like because I never looked above. He was married also, but we don't hear anything about his wife. Urmila was his wife's name. But we don't hear much about her. There must be so much, but how much can you put in one Ramayana? So he was so respectful. Served constantly, but he would keep a little distance, and he never looked above the feet of Sita Devi. Srila Prabhupada, when he first came to America, he was, even though old in age, he was quite healthy. And he said that, see, I have so many beautiful young women disciples. He was comparing himself to some other so-called gurus from India who had come and enjoy their Western disciples. Prabhupada said, I can also do it, but I'm not lacking in strength, but I have no desire. Once Srila Prabhupada rhetorically asked some of his disciples, why are these people, why are they worshipping me? Because I'm free from sex desire. From Ram Lila again, Hanuman himself is famous Generally in India, people want to be brahmacharis. They worship Hanuman with the... But often the idea is to be a brahmachari and become very strong, and they do exercises. The wrestlers, they worship Hanuman. They get strength. But Hanuman, of course, he had strength. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he criticized that idea of being a brahmachari for physical strength. That may be there, but that's not the aim and object of it. So Hanuman, that famous incident is there, where he was looking for Sita among the queens of Mandodari, that he came toward the end, so the queens of Ravana. He came toward the end of the night in Ravana's palace where they'd been partying, and so many women were sprawled out here and there. They were all sleeping after drinking, and their hair was scattered, their clothes were scattered. Definitely not the right kind of place for a brahmachari. And Hanuman thought that, how can I as a brahmachari look among all these people? He was trying to find Sita. But he thought, well, for service I have to do it. And he said, and my mind won't be disturbed because my mind is fixed on Ram. I'm doing this for service. So he could do that. He could move among very beautiful women. In Ravana, he was a connoisseur. He didn't just pick up any women here and there. He picked up the most beautiful women in the universe. So very, very beautiful women in all, semi-naked or not, with their clothes scattered, hair scattered. Hanuman was not disturbed. He's so great. Brahmachari. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, playing as a devotee. Even in his Grihastha Lila, he wouldn't joke with women, with his own wife. Yes. That also not excessively. We find the descriptions in Chaitanya Bhagavata. He wouldn't interact that much with either of his wives. And if there was a woman, if he was passing on the path and there's a woman coming the other way, he would stand aside and give path for them to go. So that's the etiquette. If a woman's coming the other way, you get out of the way, let her pass. Of course, we may ask that, well, how women were going here and there, because the culture was that they would remain in the house. Not all of them. Bengal was never that strict compared to other parts of India, but generally the respectable one would stay in the house. Prabhupada said about his own mother, she wouldn't, if she was to go out, she would go out in a palki, this palanquin, so no one would see her. But that was the higher class women. Others, they would go just like, maybe vegetable sellers or fisherwomen or something like that. So they would go. Groups of women would also go to temples. But that usually wouldn't be very far. Anyway, that's a side point. But after taking sannyas, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very concerned to set an ideal example of sannyas. Just so that people in his name would not misuse that facility. So when devotees came from Bengal to visit Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, one of them came, his name was Parameshwar Modak. Modak means he was a sweet maker. And in his childhood, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would often visit his sweet shop and his Parameshwar's wife would, just like mother to young Nimai, would give him sweets. So when Parameshwar came he didn't think of the etiquette that now Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is a sannyasi. And Parameshwar came and he said that Mukundar Mata, I mean the mother of Mukunda, which means Parameshwar's wife, she's also come. He thought Chaitanya Mahaprabhu should be pleased to hear that, because Parameshwar's wife was just like a motherly figure to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became very hesitant upon hearing that, because it's just in the presence of a sannyasi, you're not supposed to even mention the name of a woman. Actually, it's not even their name, but it's just saying the mother of Mukunda. You don't even know. Mostly in the villages in Bengal, even now, people, they don't know what the woman's name is, actually. They never say the name. You just say the mother of so-and-so, the mother of the first son. So that's mentioned that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he became hesitant, because you know, this was against the etiquette, that in the presence of a sannyasi you shouldn't even mention anything about women. Can you imagine how strict Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was? But then he didn't say anything, because he thought that out of love Parameshwara has overstepped this. Now another example is when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu once, he was walking with Govinda in Puri, Govinda his servant, and he heard coming from the temple, the Jagannath temple, very sweet singing of Gita Govinda. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became gripped with ecstasy and started running. There was some distance to the temple, started running to the temple to, he wanted to embrace the singer because the singing was so sweet. And Govinda could understand that this is a woman singing. So Govinda ran after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who was running, and it was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in such, gripped by such ecstasy, he just ran straight, and there was a whole area of thorn trees, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's body was getting ripped by the thorns. He didn't even feel it, because he was, and Govinda somehow caught Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and cried out, "It's a woman!" And at the word woman, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to external consciousness. And he said to Govinda, said, "Oh, you saved my life. If I had embraced a woman, I would have had to die." He was so strict like that. Iskinchanam, what's that? There's one verse he said. Iskinchanasya Bhagavad Bhajanon Makasya Parang Param Jigamisho Bhavasagarasya. Next line. Now, ha 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 hantam Vishaya Sandashanam Vishayanam Atayoshitam Chaha Hanta Hanta Vishabhakshana Tampya Sadhu. You learn that verse, good. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that for someone who has renounced the world for the sake, Iskinchanasya Bhagavad Bhajam, for the sake of worshipping Krishna, if he sees a materialistic person or someone who is attached to women, it's better that he doesn't. It's better that he drinks poison and dies than do so. That was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's standard. He was so strict with Chota Haridas, Chota Haridas had become a renunciant. But even in Haridas's mind, there was some, by seeing a woman in Chota Haridas, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, even though Chota Haridas, he begged rice for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to cook for Mahaprabhu, because this Madhavi Devi, who is very renounced, elderly devotee, very advanced devotee, one of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said to be his 3.5 most intimate associates. And she had a certain, the best quality of rice. So Haridas went there to beg some from her to cook for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu found out about this, he banished Haridas. don't come in my company. He told his followers, don't let him come in my company. He never relaxed that path. After 1 year, Haridas went and committed suicide by drowning himself. And when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu got the news, he said, very good. Hard as a thunderbolt. He wouldn't tolerate. When Prabhupada was asked that, should we do that for sannyasis, and Prabhupada said, no, I can't be so strict. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I can't be. I need people to help me. If all the devotees who ever wore saffron had to commit suicide and for thinking of women, then our movement would have the same reputation as that Jonestown cult in which they all killed themselves. But that's the standard. That's the standard. Not the Jonestown cult's the standard. I mean the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Lakshman, Hanuman, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Such a great brahmacharya. From the beginning of life, there's never any. There's no mention of him having any interaction with women or any desire to have anything to do with all that. He had female disciples. He would write letters to them, also instructing them in spiritual life. That we can see from the collected letters. You can see from the grammatical form that sometimes he's writing to female. But he was very strict. Don't get mixed up. Comment is about hardcore brahmacharis. Core, do you know what that means? It's like the core of an apple. It means the inside part. But actually, devotees are supposed to be soft-hearted, right? Hard, it may seem like that because it seems very harsh to be so cut off from the world and following principles strictly, maybe speaking strongly. It's required to be externally hard if we're soft externally, then we're liable to be washed away by Maya. And some hardness is required for preaching, some rigidness is required to keep us steady in Krishna consciousness. But internally, softness, Krishna consciousness after all means bhakti, means love, loving feelings for Krishna. Krishna also exhibits some hardness. But his basic quality is softness. Yesterday I saw on the back of a car, usually here in India, everyone puts something on the back of their car, often something religious. So I saw it was written in Hindi writing, Akhilam Madhuram, as we were just coming here, which of course is from the Madhurashtakam, that Madhuradhipateya Akhilam Madhuram, everything about him, the Lord of sweetness, Krishna, is sweet. In this regard, it's pertinent to quote one verse describing Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who undoubtedly appear to be very hard. This is a verse composed by one of his well-known disciples, Srila Bhakti Rakshak Sridhar Maharaj, with Sridhar Maharaj's own, you could say, purport, translation come purport. Nikhila Bhuvana Maya Chinna Vichinna Katri Vibuddha Bahula Mrigya Mukti Mohanta Datri shithilita vidhi raga radhya radheshadhani vilasitu hridi nityam bhakti siddhantavani. With his first step, he cut to pieces the entire plane of exploitation, and with his second, he crushed the speculation of scholars of salvation and liberation. Very hard. With his third, he softened Vaidhi Bhakti with a touch of divine love, Raga Marga. So, hard and soft. First of all, smash Maya, and then bring in the softness of Krishna. Taking us beyond Vaikuntha, he has introduced us to the highest worship of Sri Sri Radha Govinda. With the softness of Vrindavan within and the hardness of a devastator without, he created havoc in the world by fighting with one and all, single-handedly battling against the whole world and cutting everything to pieces was his external feature. His second attitude was to stop the boasting research of scholars and doctors of different schools of thought. And third, to minimize and slacken the grandeur of the worship of Narayana and establish service to Radha Govinda as the topmost attainment. He caused the domain of love to descend into this plane with service to Radha Govinda, establishing that the flow of divine love from the heart is all in all. That was his history, the real existence of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Prabhupada. May his divine teachings, Bhaktisiddhanta Vani, dance eternally within the core of our hearts. So that's an answer. Hard core? No, soft core. And hard outside, maybe. But it's also not, it's not a profile to cut that you have to show yourself to be very tough and hard. The principle, anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya varjanam. Whatever is required for Krishna's service. If it's required to be hard, be hard. If it's required to be soft, that's all. Hare Krishna. Any question? How is it possible in this Kali Yuga? Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Eva Kevalam. Kalo nasceva, 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 gatiranyata. Chant the holy names, pray for the blessings of... Prabhupada recommended to pray for the mercy of Harinash Thakur, to be free from sexual desires. Also in the Bhagavatam, I believe it's in the narration of the Narayana Kavacha, that it's recommended that to be free from lusty desires, one should take shelter of the four Kumaras or Sanat Kumara. And we can pray to Prabhupada, who has so many beautiful young women disciples. But never treated them in... There was never any hint of anything in his dealings with them other than a fatherly attitude. Pray to Prabhupada, we get the blessings of all previous acharyas. Best thing is just don't think about it. That's what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur recommended. Prabhupada mentions that in one purport. Not being free from sexual desires. It's just like Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gave the example that just like if you decide to fast on one day, then you don't even think of food because you've already made the decision you're not going to take any. So for you, just don't think about it. And if you do think about it, you're in trouble because then you just suffer all day. But normally on a fasting day, you just don't think. And then when you see food, and you know, well, it's not for me anyway, so you just, you're not attracted. Just like if you make the vow not to eat anything not offered to Krishna, then you can walk past the ice cream shop and the hot lorries, they're selling, you know, all kinds of things. Yesterday this guy came around on his bicycle selling samosas, comes around in the evening here. I was just thinking Prabhupada would approve of that. He liked that kind of thing where someone would, rather than being employed by someone, the wife will cook at home and he'll take out some samosas. He has his own business. Small business, but it's a business. So, otherwise, your senses will be tortured every time, especially in India. There's actually all over the world, there are all kinds of things. There are all kinds of chocolates and sweet shops and ice cream shops and people coming around selling samosas. And if you go on the beach in Bombay, or yeah, there'll be all kinds of, you know, what's that called? Pani Puri? Bel Puri, all Chana Chur, and all kinds of, you're on the train and they come around, and the local trains in Bengal, they sell this masala muri, and they mix it up in all kinds of different ways, and a little bit of onion and chilies and salt and this and mustard oil. You just be tortured all the time. But then if you make the vow, I'll only take Krishna prasadam at regulated times, then the senses are controlled. So in the same way, if you decide, well, anyway, I'm not going to get married, and I don't... Or if you're married and think, anyway, I have my wife, that's all. Nothing else. Then the senses are controlled. Like that. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna.